Today on Colchonero Chat, we are sounding the war drums. It's the big Madrid Derby preview pod with managing Madrid's Kian Sobani. And I don't think it needs more of an introduction than that. Stick with us. Buenos dias. Welcome to Colchonero Chat, the podcast of record of IntoTheCalderon.com, a proud member of the SB Nation family of blogs, and a podcast with a big day ahead of it. Jeremy Barron here with you. My guest on the program today is the editor of Managing Madrid, a regular contributor to 442, and host of the Kian Sobani podcast. It's Kian Sobani.
Jeremy, what is going on, my friend?
Kian, man, great to talk to you. Thanks for stopping by. Just getting ready for this big game, as I'm sure you are.
Yes, we've been anticipating this for a while now, and to be honest, dreading it with all of our injuries and health concerns and just the general fear that Atletico Madrid induces to Madridistas in La Liga.
Yeah, I've seen a little bit of that. Atletico fans have been waiting for this for about 6 months, waiting with bated breath for this game. It's the Saturday night game in Spain, 12:45 p.m. kickoff on the West Coast, which is where I'm at, a couple hours later where you are, Kian. But it's a big game on many different fronts. It's a big test for Madrid, who are putting a couple unbeaten runs on the line. For Atletico, it's a big test as well, because two of the last three games in La Liga have been losses, and another loss in the derby on Saturday would have some devastating consequences, as we'll talk about a little later on in the show. But what are your general thoughts heading into tomorrow, like initial observations that there are some injuries that Madrid are dealing with? What are your general thoughts?
Yeah, the biggest question mark is how will Zidane actually line up tomorrow? A lot of people are asking for a bit of an unconventional approach, like a 4-4-2, but I'm not sure if Zidane is going to look at this and say this is the time to experiment now. The reality is that Real Madrid is going into this game tomorrow without a pure defensive midfielder, and that was the one question mark heading into the season. Was this team has so much depth at every single position bar one, and that was the defensive midfielder position. Yeah. Where, you know, if Casemiro goes down, you have a makeshift lineup with Kroos, which in theory is fine. I mean, he played there brilliantly for Germany. You know, he's used to playing in a deep role, and his intelligence pretty well masks any deficiencies he might have there, you know, but to rely on that consistently, but then to overplay him, give him 90 minutes in a Copa del Rey blowout, and then he goes down, and Real Madrid have no one left. So now you're starting to get a bit creative with your lineup. Modric and Kovacic will probably play a deeper role, and then you have Isco who will probably hover in between a three-man midfield. So those are the question marks. And those are the challenges that Zidane has to face tomorrow.
I was talking to Om yesterday, and he is getting a bit of a 2015 4-0 vibe from this game already.
No, I can't tell if that is a sincere prediction or if it's just some banter, I don't know, or some his way of coping or jinxing it, I don't know. I honestly think, well, I'll say this, Zidane seems to surprise people every time his back seems against the wall. You know, the fact that they are where they are and haven't lost since last season, despite not being completely healthy and despite Zidane being far from a tactical guru, you know, things seem to fall into place. I don't know. I think Atleti will win this. I think it'll be more like a 1-0. I don't think it'll be an immense scoreline on that scale. You know, I think it'll be a close game, but I think Zidane will surprise us in some ways, and Real Madrid will put in a good performance, but I don't see them winning.
Yeah, that's the feeling I've gotten. The Atletico are the better's favorites right now. That was on the cover of AS this morning, and with all the injuries Madrid are currently facing, Casemiro's out, Toni Kroos is out, Pepe is out, Benzema is going to play, but he might not be fully fit. Ramos is back in the team. Modric is back in the team. But those are some key injuries that Madrid are facing entering this game. And you're right, Zidane has kept this team unbeaten despite not having the finest tactics, despite not having the finest health. So far this season, how do you think Madrid have done? the style of play hasn't always been what Madridistas have expected, but the team's still unbeaten.
Yeah, I think there seems to always be two extremes to the narratives and the opinions that people have regarding Real Madrid season. I think one is that this team is entirely lucky to be where they are. Zidane is not cut out for this job. BBC is struggling. Ronaldo is finished. And once the schedule gets a bit harder, which, you know, coming up, we have a ridiculous schedule against Barca, against you guys. We go away to the Mestalla. And, you know, then we have Dortmund also and Sporting Lisbon. The other extreme is that everything is fine.
Yeah.
You know, the team hasn't lost since last season. The team has had a lot of injuries. Once everyone gets healthy, everything will be okay again. And, you know, if Real Madrid are doing this well result-wise until now, just imagine what they'll be when everyone is healthy. I think the objective way of looking at it is somewhere in the middle, where I think the gap in the disparity in La Liga has decreased quite a bit this year. There's a lot of really good La Liga teams. And I think, you know, on top of that, the bigger teams are struggling. You know, you guys have struggled.
Yeah.
We have struggled. Barca has struggled. So the disparity is less, and I think that's okay. You know, there are fans who expect 3 points every match. The reality is La Liga is very, very good this year. And that's not necessarily realistic to expect. And any, you know, if you look at the top 10 to 11 teams in the league, any one of those teams can really beat any one of the other teams above them. And, you know, you have smaller teams punching above their weight, and you know, that's the reality. And I think the team has done okay up until now. You know, I think there's been some underrated performances. I think, you know, our performance in Dortmund was very good. When, you know, that, by the way, Jeremy, that was one of the matches where, like this one, there was a lot of doom and gloom. No one thought we could get a result in Dortmund. And, you know, the tactics were actually a bit underrated. I thought Zidane played his cards right that game.
That game was very nearly 3 points for Real Madrid until the goal from Schürrle was very nearly a 2-1 win.
Yeah, and I mean, the narrative also is like, even when Real Madrid plays well, there just seems to be some defensive lapses and brain farts, particularly from Varane and Ramos this season. And Keylor Navas hasn't been the same Keylor Navas we saw last season either. So all of those things, you know, play a part. But, you know, I think if I'm going to grade this until now, I don't know how I would grade it. But I think it's more objective to look at it somewhere down the middle and say, this team has struggled. It also has health issues. And, you know, there isn't a reason to say that if everyone is healthy, they can perform better than they are.
Yeah, and that's fair. I tend to view it a bit more objectively as well, in that, no, this is not, you know, the beautiful flowing play that a lot of people have come to expect out of Real Madrid, but it's getting results. And Cristiano Ronaldo's form has been a little up and down, but the team has so many different goal scorers. I think at last check it was, 15 different goal scorers in the league, which is insane.
Yeah.
Just up and down the squad, they have so many options. And no, Zidane is not a tactical genius. He's not revolutionizing things tactically, but I think he's brought this sense of togetherness that hasn't always been there because it's been, you know, so unstable in the dugout for many years. He's brought some togetherness there.
Yeah, and I think you nailed it. I think there's a lot of people who will say, you know, this team looks no better than it did under Rafa. The reality is, even if the play hasn't improved a whole lot, the results are better, one, and the cohesiveness is better. And you can't put a value on that. It's priceless to have someone to come in to form that unity within the team. And, you know, and this is all like very proven, by the way. Like, we know that Rafa instilled a kind of a nightmarish morale in the locker room. Players mocked him. They didn't respect him.
Yep.
And, you know, whether that's on him or the players, I don't know. That's another discussion. But, you know, there's something to be said for sure. And it's underrated, that aspect of the game, that cohesiveness, as you all know. Like, with you guys, you have the bounty that not only Simeone is arguably the best motivator on the planet, but he's also tactically, he's brilliant. So I think you guys have the best of both worlds.
Yeah, it's pretty nice to have him. it's pretty nice, I will say. So the start to the season, Real Madrid still unbeaten despite some of these problems, and you don't think it'll continue on Saturday with the injury issues, which we'll talk a little more about now. Toni Kroos is obviously the biggest name that's going to be out, but how big an absence? How much will Pepe's absence be felt?
I think Pepe's absence is a little lessened, mostly because that is the one position where we have pretty great depth. And, you know, I think Nacho, to me, for example, is one of the unsung heroes of this team.
He's been good this year.
And he's been good, and he deserves a ton of respect. I think he's a character guy. He stayed with the club as like a fourth choice center back, essentially, rather than going to Serie A or Roma and basically being offered a starting role. And he's been so reliable, and few talk about him. You know, even with the Spanish national team, I thought he's been solid. Anytime he's had to play for Real Madrid, he's been solid, and he's just under the radar, really reliable. So. And, you know, like, we have Ramos coming back, and he hasn't been fantastic this season, but, you know, he has the experience you need in a derby. So there's no question, Jeremy, like, to your question, Kroos's absence will be felt way more than Pepe's. Also, I'm sure you know, but Atletico, the way they press and they hound you, you need players who are comfortable in tight spaces and having players breathing down your throat. And Kroos is someone who excels in that role.
Yeah, he's so good at breaking presses. He's incredible at it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, yeah, there's no question that Kroos' absence is huge.
Yeah, that's going to be tough to overcome. At least Modric is back, though.
Yes. It would have been nice to have them both back.
Of course.
You know, I think there's no silver lining, I think, to not having Kroos or Casemiro. But if there is anything that comes out of this is that, or gives us any comfort, it's that Modric has looked really good in a deep role, especially with Croatia. He has a calming presence that he brings, and it's one of those things you can't even put a stat on it or put a finger on it and on how he does it. But immediately when he returned and came on as a substitute in the last match day, everything just seemed calm. And less chaotic, just with him being on the pitch. He can control things, he can create space for himself when space just doesn't exist, and he calms the midfield down, and he just composes the entire build-up. So, and the other thing is, you know, this kind of forces Zidane's hand to play Isco in a game where I think Isco should play in. If you zoom out and you look at the schedule, you look at Real Madrid's you know, toughest matches, I think you circle this one and say, this is the one game I think you need Isco because he's so unpredictable. And, you know, Simeone's defensive scheme is so airtight and they can kind of sway you where they want on the pitch and just pick your crosses off, pick your passes off and hound you. Isco is one of those guys who can theoretically break that because he's unpredictable and he does things that defenders can't necessarily prepare for.
Yeah, Isco's, as you mentioned, his unpredictability. He's a very shifty player. He's very versatile. I think he can be very important. And Atletico's press is going to be relentless as ever in front of the Calderon. But you mentioned Modric's composure, his calmness. That's going to be huge because this is going to be a cauldron. Simeone was talking in his press conference today about how the Calderon needs to be the 12th player tomorrow. I think you can expect that. I think it's going to be a very crazy kind of atmosphere. And Atletico enter this game with just a couple injury concerns. Antoine Griezmann's going to play. Juan Fran confirmed it yesterday. Griezmann suffered a knock to his foot over the international break for France, but he returned to full training, so he's good to go. Jan Oblak also is not 100%, but he will play.
Does it ever amaze you that you guys don't ever seem to get injuries during the FIFA break? I envy you.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I'm expecting the other shoe to drop at some point. But no, Profe Ortega is our fitness guru. He does an amazing job because this is one of the most demanding systems to play in Europe. Simeone asks so much out of his players, and they press so relentlessly. It's amazing how healthy Atletico are coming out of every international break.
Yeah, and that's what scares me. And the other thing that scares me is the fact that you guys look so much better going forward this season as opposed to last season. I remember last season I thought defensively, particularly that match against Barcelona at home, I don't think I've ever seen a team defend like that unless we're going way back to like early millennium Italy in the Euros or something. It was a masterclass defensive performance. I thought your counterattacking was a bit lacking, but your finishing was efficient. And this year, everything just seems to be clicking offensively. So, like, I'm curious to know what has changed. Is it just basically Carrasco making a leap? Is it, you know, your fullbacks are getting more involved?
It's Koke playing through the middle. Simeone moved Koke to central midfield, and that seemed to unlock everything. He actually did it towards the end of last season, when Atletico had a particularly dire run without scoring goals. This was after goalless draws with Villarreal, Sevilla, PSV in the Champions League. Simeone moved Koke to the middle of the park, and that seemed to unlock everything. Atletico started scoring 2-3 goals routinely, and that helped get them, you know, to a position where they could compete for La Liga in the penultimate match day and get back to the Champions League final. It's more of a permanent switch this year, and Atletico have already scored 4 or more in a game 4 times this season. They did that once in the league last season. And Carrasco has definitely taken a massive step forward. He was awarded the number 10 shirt, so we knew that he was going to take another step this year, but not this one. This is a massive leap forward, and he was rewarded with a new contract a few weeks back. So Carrasco has been great. The new signings, Gamero in particular, has fit in really well. It was one that came without much fanfare, but I remember talking to you about it when it was announced at the end of July that Gamero was a great signing. Not the big name, the 60 million euro kind of guy, but he fits like a glove. So Gamero's done great.
Yeah, to me, he was the one thing you guys were missing. Ever since Diego Costa left, it doesn't seem like Simeone had trusted any of the strikers. You know, you had Torres come in, you had Vieto, and you know, it didn't seem like there was any consistency there. And with Gamero, I was like, you know, this guy just finished lighting up La Liga. He's an incredible signing. You know, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, I think he hasn't been as prolific as you may have hoped he would be. I think he scored, what, 5 goals in La Liga?
Yeah, his goals are kind of coming in bunches, but he's scoring them.
Right, yeah. And, you know, as he gets integrated and stuff, everything will flow a bit nicer, I think. But yeah, that is a big change. So you have Koke going down the middle, and then, so does your lineup look pretty straightforward heading into this weekend? Will Simeone play this differently than any other game, do you think?
I think it's pretty straightforward. The only question is whether Saul or Nico Gaitán is going to start. I think it's going to be Saul, though. But other than that, it's going to be Oblak, Juanfran, Godin, Savic, and Felipe at the back, as ever. Koke and Gabby in the middle of the park with Carrasco and probably Saul on the other, on the wings, and then Griezmann and Gamero up front.
Yeah.
Seems pretty straightforward. So you mentioned Zidane might look to play 4-4-2 himself. Atletico are going to look a bit 4-3-3 going forward, and Griezmann will probably drop back into defense. But you have mentioned Zidane may look to go 4-4-2 for this one.
I don't think Zidane will shift from his general identity. You know, not that anyone really completely understands what the identity is, but if we're looking at the standard 4-3-3 that he rolls out, I think that will look familiar enough tomorrow. I think you'll have Modric and Kovacic both playing a bit deeper, and Isco there as a third midfielder, which in a sense helps defensively way more so than, let's say, James Rodriguez playing as a third midfielder in a 4-3-3, because Isco understands what to do defensively way better. His IQ without the ball is very good. He understands how to cover for Marcelo and cover those half spaces and dropping on a counterattack. You know, Isco is very good in those situations. So I think that'll work. And then, you know, I think some people are asking for a 4-4-2, but it's not, you know, if you had maybe Lucas Vazquez come in on the wing and Isco on the other wing, and then Kovacic and Modric in the middle as a double pivot, it might work, but at the same time, it probably won't, because you have to play with a number 9. I think anytime Real Madrid has tried playing without one, they've struggled offensively. And Morata is out, and Benzema will probably play even if he's not 100%. And that leaves one space for Ronaldo and Bale, which is impossible. And we know that if BBC is healthy, they'll play. So immediately, you basically can't 4-4-2. I think what you can't play 4-4-2. What you might see is Bale dropping a bit deeper. You know, he did that against Warsaw in that 3-3 in Poland. And he's very good at dropping deeper. He has the lungs to do it. He's used to playing as a traditional winger or as a left back even. So he can theoretically play a bit deeper. But I don't think, even if it lines up as a 4-4-2 on paper, I think it's going to be more of a 4-3-3 traditional, you know, what he's put out all season.
Yeah, it could be. I think a 4-4-2 could work. But as you mentioned, you know, Benzema is going to play, you know, for better or worse. Obviously, Cristiano is going to be out there, Bale as well. So it probably is going to look 4-3-3. How big a loss is Morata for this one? That just getting hurt in a friendly is really not good. And he's been one of Madrid's two or three best players this season. He's been awesome.
He's been awesome, and he has been our most important signing in years, I think, because last season when Benzema was injured or couldn't play, the team just looked crippled because they had no way to compensate for his absence. You had Kessié, who just couldn't do anything that Benzema did, really. And the way, you know, Benzema holds the ball, links up with Ronaldo, his finishing even, you know, has really improved over the years. This season, the team doesn't look crippled when, you know, they don't have to alter formations or try to force in a false nine or make it work with another formation with a different kind of player. Morata just fits in like a glove, and he's been in really good form. Obviously, it's a huge blow. You know, he has looked better off the bench. I think there's a lot of Madridistas who think, you know, just because he's outperforming Benzema, which also is debatable. I think that Benzema's had a bit of an underrated season. I thought he's actually looked pretty good. I don't get all the criticism that's going his way. But, you know, I think just because a reserve player or a bench player outperforms a starter doesn't necessarily mean he should start every game. I think there's something to be said about rotations. I think there's something to be said about the chaos that Morata brings off the bench and taking advantage of tired defenders, because he's a fireball, you know, like as a player. He puts so much pressure on defenders, and he's such a passionate player, and he puts his heart and soul, you know, all these intangibles that I don't really like using, but you can see it. I mean, he's a very great energy guy to bring off the bench, and I think, but, you know, when he's injured, obviously it's not ideal if Benzema's not healthy. So it's a huge blow not having Morata, because at some point, I think, you know, Benzema won't be able to play the 90 minutes tomorrow, whether he starts or he comes off the bench. So, you know, Zidane will have to be creative with how he lines up without a nine for parts of this game.
It's kind of a similar situation to Angel Correa at Atletico. You love having him, but when someone else goes down and he's forced into the 11, it, you know, it's a little, you know, he loses something. It's great to have Correa, because he comes on the bench, comes off the bench 60, 70 minutes into the game and just burns through defenders. Smoldering pace, incredible dribbling skills, underrated passing skills as well. His vision has really developed over the past year or so, and Simeone trusts him a lot more than he did. He's gotten a bit of a run in the starting 11 this season, but having him come off the bench, it is a necessity. It's not just a luxury, it's a necessity. And when you lose that, you lose a huge part of your late game strategy. You lose a big part of this late game dynamism when you need to score a goal, when you need to put a game out of reach. And I think that's a similar situation to losing Morata would be like losing Correa, where he's, you know, your top forward off the bench and a guy who can just burn through defense late in games.
I think that's a great comparison, actually. Correa is just one of those guys who can just break your back.
Yeah, absolutely.
Comes off the bench. Yeah.
Yep. Just incredible pace, and still has some maturing to do, but hopefully he puts in a good shift tomorrow. So this game is big for both sides. Real Madrid have not won a league derby since the Jose Mourinho era, as you know, and tomorrow would be another chance to end that hoodoo of sorts. We can talk about the Champions League derbies all we want, but the league derbies still go Atletico's way. A Madrid win would be a big test passed for them. I think you would agree that this would really boost their title credentials.
It would. It really would. I think, you know, in a sense that you could argue maybe these three points are more important to Atletico, just given the standings right now. But the reality is that Real Madrid's schedule is I think, a bit tougher. Like, you guys have already gone to Mestalla. You guys have already gone to Camp Nou. And I keep using the Mestalla as a reference for a difficult game, when in reality Valencia are not the same Valencia we knew growing up. But we know that it's a tough place to play in. We know that you guys struggled there. We know that Barcelona struggled there and escaped. So I think in that sense, Real Madrid's, because of the schedule, and you guys have gotten some of the quote-unquote easier games out of the way, I think those 3 points are just as important for Real Madrid. You know, so I think it's needed. It would boost the title credentials for sure. But, you know, it's one of those things that I think Real Madrid would be happy with a draw as well.
I would agree that a draw would be a fine result away, with the injuries mounting for Zidane. And as you mentioned, the places Atletico have gone to already this season, which is one of the reasons I think the second half of the season could be a little smoother sailing. Atletico have already gone to Balaidos. I mentioned this on a previous pod, but they've already gone to Balaidos, Camp Nou, Mestalla, the Sanchez Pizjuan, Anoeta. They've already gone to these places. 7 points from those five games isn't a great haul, but they've already gone to these places. And you still have to go to Villarreal, of course, in December. That's going to be a very not fun game.
Yeah, that's your toughest one.
Oh, it's going to be horrible. It's going to be horrible going to El Madrid.
Bilbao in January away from home will be tough, too.
Yep. But,
You got Espanyol coming up at home. That should be, in theory, I think they got that one locked up. And then you go to Eibar, who took a couple points off Real Madrid. But yeah, no question. I think your schedule is a bit more forgiving.
As we get later into the season, because all these games are going to be in Madrid. For Atletico, this is a huge, huge game. Not only because it's the Madrid derby, it's the biggest derby on the continent now. It's one of the biggest games on the continent. But Atletico have to have this one, I think. I think they need to win this. If they don't, it would be a third game in four in La Liga with a loss or without a win. And it would pretty much end any hopes of a second title in four seasons. Atletico now 6 points behind Real Madrid. And a loss could put them 9 back. And a win could put them only 3 back and back into the conversation. So this is a massive game for Atletico, who need to keep solving this short blanket problem that Alfredo Relaño wrote about in AS a couple weeks ago. This would be... You've already played Barcelona and Bayern Munich and passed both of those tests. This is another one Atletico need to pass.
Yeah, it is crazy to me that you guys... I forgot about that, to be honest, that you guys... You also played against Bayern, and I think you almost seem to be the kryptonite for tiki-taka and Pep and that whole ideology of the, you know, stopping Barca. And I think, for me, Real Madrid also are much more suited. And like, someone asked me in a mailbag, what is the more difficult game, the derby? I'll be happy to rehash it, like probably in a shorter, more brief, coherent version if you want.
All right, let's try that. It's recording now. So we had a bit of a recording issue. So, Kian, why don't you continue? You were talking about in your mailbag, you received a question in the Managing Madrid mailbag. You received a question on what the more difficult game on the schedule is.
Yeah, someone asked me on the mailbag, what is the more difficult game on the schedule? The upcoming trip to the Calderon, or is it the trip to the Camp Nou, which is shortly after? And to me, it's a no-brainer. I think as difficult as it is to go to the Camp Nou or even play Barca anywhere, and the stakes that are in that game, the room for embarrassment to losing against them or being blown out by them, I think despite all that, the game against Atleti is easier. I think, sorry, more difficult, not easier at all, more difficult. Because against Barca, like, it's interesting to note their evolution under Luis Enrique and becoming more direct every season and surrendering possession. And if you remember, Jeremy, under Pep, that was a way for them to defend or to mask those defensive deficiencies, is to have the ball, hold the ball. It was a way of resting, and you know, when they lost it, their counter press was unparalleled to regain it, and that was their way of defending. This season, they surrender so much possession, and you know, just the law of averages: the more your opponent has the ball to have a go at you on the other side of the pitch, the more chances you'll have to concede. And you saw that when they went to the Sanchez-Pizjuan, and Sevilla overran them in the first half. Valencia had so many dangerous moments just opening up Barca's backline after dispossessing them. And I think, given that nature and their vulnerabilities there, the lack of, you know, health and stability they have at the center midfield position, and Busquets being overrun because he just doesn't have the proper support right now, I think the BBC, even in their like most poor form, can exploit that and take advantage of that. Whereas if you go against Simeone, they're so versatile defensively and they're so comfortable in so many different situations, it's just harder to take advantage of. You know, they can hound you with their press, or they can be patient and sit back in banks of four and cut off passing lanes. And they can kind of dictate what you do with the ball, which is truly amazing to watch. I think, you know, it causes you to become a bit predictable and less pragmatic in your approach, because there's only so much you can do against that defensive scheme. And if, you know, you try to get it out wide to the flanks and get crosses in, and, you know, Atleti can easily pick those off. And, you know, a way around that is if you made, you know, cutting runs from Modric or Isco, Benzema or the fullbacks to flood the box with options, so that ultimately your targets, Ronaldo and Bale, can get open and be on the end of those crosses. That is one way of, you know, coping with it. But at the same time, it's a huge risk because you're leaving yourself exposed. And I think that's the problem you have against Atletico. There are routes and strategies you can take, and each one is risky. And so for that reason, I think the way that Atletico are set up and their tactical superiority over Barcelona, and, you know, with all due respect to Luis Enrique, I think that is, you know, de facto the hardest game on the schedule, on the entire La Liga calendar. I think that's the one you circle and say, that's the one where you really need to just figure it out.
It's definitely a sign of how much respect Simeone and Atletico have garnered the past few seasons as they continue this rise and this journey to becoming, you know, well, they already are an elite club, but becoming the best and chasing that elusive European Cup. And Atletico's structure has taken a hit recently. They've started to leak goals, which is not a pretty sight. And it's pre-Simeone stuff that they've done defensively lately. But tomorrow is as great a chance as any to get back on track. We had a piece on the blog go up yesterday from one of our new writers, Robert Walker, a statistical look at the first 11 weeks. And interceptions are down, clearances are down, but the structure remains, you know, the philosophies remain the same. The structure isn't quite as, you know, watertight as it has been, but tomorrow is as good a chance as any to get that back on track. And Simeone knows how to play to Real Madrid's strengths, just about as good as anyone. So just suffocating them through the middle and dealing with some of these runs out wide, making sure you have plenty of players in the box. Zidane, I think, is expected to play this a little conservatively. I was talking to Am about this yesterday, that this will be a bit of a more conservative approach, kind of similar to the Champions League final in May, wherein if Atletico had been lethal at all, Atletico could have won that game, but I digress. And yeah, it should be a barn burner as it ever is. And For me, it's going to be most important to see if Atletico stop leaking goals and return this focus to suffocating play through the middle and just frustrating Madrid at every turn, and frustrating and Juan Fran keeping Cristiano in his back pocket as he has done recently, very well recently. So yeah, this has become a very difficult game and a very exciting game. and I would not expect anything less tomorrow. I think it's going to be a very tight game. I'm still not convinced Atletico are going to win it. Call me a pessimist, but I'm still not convinced they're going to win.
It's interesting, Jeremy, like especially that last thing you said. It always seems with fan bases that the grass is always greener on the other side. And, you know, with Real Madrid, we've been in what seems like a perpetual crisis since I was born. And, you know, if you speak to many people who cover the game, there's a good consensus that Atletico are not only the best team in Spain, but the best team in Europe. And, you know, I to be honest, I support that idea. I think pound for pound and the way they're set up, I think Atletico have been at least the most impressive because there's so many big teams struggling right now. At the same time, you look at it and this is actually the worst start Simeone has had in La Liga since taking over Atletico. So what gives there, do you think? Why is there such a perception of Atletico being so great, but why are the results lacking? You know, I've watched Atletico this season, and there were games, like especially that one in Anoeta against Sociedad, where I was like, this is not the Atleti I'm used to seeing. Yeah. But I couldn't pinpoint and see like why they're so far down.
The Sociedad game was weird because that was like the first time this season they truly played badly. They didn't play well against Sevilla either, but you know, no one goes to the Pizjuan and wins. And Sevilla are a very, very good team. I think a lot of people don't realize that yet, that this team's for real. Sevilla are going to be up there all season. The Sociedad game was really the first game this season where they just were not about it. They just did not look at all inspired, motivated. They looked kind of tired. They lacked intensity, and it showed in the scoreline and the way that Sociedad got their goals. It's something I've tried to balance and negotiate with throughout the year, because Atletico are playing great football. Simeone has laughed this off at press conferences, saying, "Oh, you just now realize we start to play pretty." But this is, you know, it's been a slower evolution. It started after the 2014 title, when this slow, gradual evolution to this more one-touch passing, having more of the ball. This season, it's really blossomed. Atletico are playing beautiful football at times, and it's actually pleasing to the eye. Whereas the last couple seasons, it was occasionally a horror show to watch Atletico try to move forward. So, I totally get where people are coming from when they say this is the best team in Europe right now. This is a team that doesn't really have many holes in it, like at all. They have depth everywhere. They have world-class players up top, at the back. Some poor league results have really set them back. The opening weekend draw against Alaves, the weekend after that they drew at Leganés. Combine that with the kind of expected losses away in some of these very difficult grounds they've had to go to, and you get a team that's currently sitting in fifth place, despite clearly being better than that, despite having a goal differential, an expected goal differential of a team that's going to finish second or third.
I think also the match against Granada, where you guys just went apeshit, and I think you scored 7 goals in that game.
7-1, yep.
7-1. I think that may have exaggerated things a bit, given that Granada are kind of the league's punching bag right now.
Yeah,
it's funny. The last season we beat Rayo 10-2. And it was considered like one of the worst performances of the season.
Of course it was. Yeah. I seem to remember that, yes. Or like, yeah, we scored 10 goals, but, you know, what else?
So I think, I don't know, it just seemed to me, I think maybe after that game, people really started to look at Atletico like, wow, this team can also score now all of a sudden. And I think that really made people pay attention to them.
I don't think it's just that game either. 4 times this season Atletico have put up 4 or more in the league. They did that once last year, and it was in April of last year, which shows just how difficult it was to score on a team that had Jackson Martinez and Luciano Vietto on it. So this is a team that's been together, that started to develop, that has developed chemistry, and it's showing. However, you get the feeling that they should look better in the table. Like, you watch them playing and you say, wow, this team is really, really good. And they are really, really good. they're one of the three best teams in Europe. But you look at the league table and it tells a different story. But, you know, I was told La Liga is just a two-team league.
Yes.
That's what I was told.
The running joke now.
Yeah, it's a trash league.
But, I mean, like, I think things will normalize by the time the winter break rolls around. And I think we'll have a better sample size of how this is actually going to unfold. But I agree with you. I think, you know, Sevilla is the real deal. I think Villarreal is the real deal. And, you know, we've talked about this before, but just going down the list, there's a lot of good teams in the league. I think Atletico will definitely be higher than they are now, though.
Oh, absolutely.
I could be wrong, but once we've seen every single team play against each other and halfway through the season, we'll have a better measuring stick, I think.
Yeah, it's not at all time to panic. Again, look at the fixture list. We do have one question that I want to ask you, and then we have a little thing for fun at the end today. This is from @SA17HIL. I'm not going to try to pronounce that. Do you agree that many Atleti players calling Luka Modric the most important player of Real Madrid? Do you agree with that assessment? I know Gabby said it earlier this week. Simeone has said it before. He said that about Casemiro before. But Gabby in particular, in an interview earlier this week, called Modric Real Madrid's most important player. Do you agree with that?
I agree. I think we talked about this before, but we talked about the calmness he brings to the pitch and how gracefully he's been aging, and I think he has a few years left in the tank at the very least. He is just so so imposing for such a little guy, and it blows my mind still, not only aesthetically how he plays, but just his ability to control the pitch and dictate, distribute, tackle, so versatile, so intelligent. I would definitely not agree that Casemiro is the most important player. I think fans like Casemiro because of the idea of what he represents, that destroying midfielder who brings stability in defense, but he does little else than barge into players. And the Casemiro thing is one that I don't necessarily see eye to eye with Madridistas on, but certainly I think Modric, you can make a case. And I think it's interesting that I would say the second most important player on the team is Bale. So you have the two former Spurs guys who have been, I think, so important. And moving forward, I think, you know, Bale will even take on a bigger role. But I can't, even if it was not Modric and it was someone else, you can't disagree with it, really. It's hard to disagree with.
Yeah, quickly on Bale, love how he's played this season, and he just got that new contract, so he's going to take this even bigger role than he already has. He's great. And with Modric, it's interesting because during the Mourinho era, he was kind of on the outs. Mourinho didn't especially, you know, play him a whole lot, and I remember the rumors where he was going to go back to England, and I think it's a good thing that he didn't.
Yeah, it's interesting with Modric, and another reason why he's so lovable is that he was so close to not making it, like, everywhere he went. Like, from his childhood, he got cut from, you know, his initial childhood team. The name slips my mind now, but he almost quit the game altogether because he was so small and frail. And then when he went to England, they had the same criticisms of him, and he was played out of position, and he wasn't physical enough. And then he started to find his feet under, I think it was Redknapp who came in after Juan de Ramos. And then he came to Spain and he had difficulties too, finding a place. And, you know, it just makes his success story that much more sweeter. And he's just such a likable dude too, like off the pitch. And not that I know him personally or anything, but he's just a class act. And I think for that reason, I think people just gravitate towards him. Even if you're not a Real Madrid fan, he's a very lovable character.
I personally wouldn't say lovable, but I respect him as a player. I think he's a great, great player.
Fair enough, Jeremy.
So, last thing for today. I have a Q&A going up on Into the Calderon later on today. But Robbie did one with you guys earlier this week. And I believe the comments section on that particular Q&A were not very complimentary towards Robbie. Would I be correct in saying that?
He definitely didn't win any new fans. It's funny. Like I think your Q&A is with that's going up today, and yeah. I think he'll probably be better received from your fan base than Robbie was. I think because Robbie God love him, came off a bit arrogant in his responses, but we know a lot of them were tongue-in-cheek, and I think there was a question I asked him to... I think there was two instances. One, I asked him about, you know, if it makes him happier at all that Kroos isn't playing in Real Madrid, has a depletion of resources in midfield, and he basically said that it doesn't really matter, and, you know, that if you took all the traits of Kroos and Modric and Iniesta, and he named another genius midfielder, and he said Koke has all of those attributes that those guys have put together or something.
Yeah.
And Flames. And then I asked him to just predict the game, and he said...
He said 3-1. Well,
3-0, yeah. He said, I'll be writing the match report about the 3-0 that Atletico Madrid will win this game. And I think in the comments, I don't know if I want to repeat anything that was said in the comment section, but it's there. You can go to the site and just look at the comments and see how Robbie's answers were received by the fans.
I believe one commenter referred to him as a quote-unquote son of a bitch.
I wasn't sure if we were allowed to say it, but, you know, yes, that was one of the reactions.
Listen, I know Robbie. He's just that tongue-in-cheek personality, so don't attack the lad. He's really good, so leave him alone. But, it was pretty amusing. Yeah, go read the comments if you want to. I'm sure there are some vulgar ones in there.
Yeah, I would. It would be interesting to do a Q&A with him if Atletico ever won the Champions League. And if you posted that on the site, I'm sure the confidence would grow like threefold.
Oh man,
I would be interested in interviewing Robbie like before the Simeone era. That would be interesting to see what his confidence levels were like.
Yeah, not nearly what they are now. Yeah, and if Atletico ever do win the Champions League, I'm not sure you could get a hold of Robbie, so to speak, because he would be I think I would be too. We'd be out having a grand old time.
Yes,
painting the town red and white. Yeah. Well, we are done. I want to thank my guest, Kian Sobhany. Thanks so much for coming on, man. Really appreciate it.
Man, this was a ton of fun. And I think we should remind your listeners that you'll be on our podcast post-match Sunday night. Well, the game's on Saturday, but we'll be recording one on Sunday night. So hopefully you guys can all tune into that one as well.
Absolutely. I will indeed be joining Kian, and Gabe is going to be there, I believe.
Yes.
Yep,
yes.
They will be there. So I will be joining them on Sunday night for the post-Derby pod. And Coach Nero Chat will be back next week, hopefully on Monday, to review what is hopefully an Atletico win on Saturday. Thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you next time. Adios. Okay, that recorded.